non-alcoholic Hank Sheldon. And I can't believe we're at the end. It's been a wonderful day. It's been a great experience. Thank you for your kindness and your attentiveness. And we're going to talk about the 12-step a little bit here. And I'm a product of the 12-step, a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous that understands how important 12-step work is. You know, my story is that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous absolutely convinced it wouldn't work for me, physically addicted to alcohol at the end of my rope. And I remember I was at the Simi Valley Alano Club. It's my second night of recovery. I attended the 6 o'clock meeting. And the 6 o'clock meeting was an hour and a half long, and it ended at 7:30, and then there was a half an hour break, and I'm waiting for the 8 o'clock meeting to start. And that particular night, I did not look the way that I looked this evening. I had long hair down the middle of my back, and I had stopped showering, so I was dirty. And I had a full beard with food stuck in it. I was suffering from audio and visual hallucinations. I had lost the ability to speak the King's English. I communicated in a series of hand gestures, grunts, and clicks. I was wearing my sunglasses at night, and I had my arms folded across my chest, and I was rocking back and forth in the Simi Valley Alano Club with my tough guy radar out. And I didn't have my arms folded across my chest because I'm a tough guy. I had my arms folded across my chest because I felt like I was going to explode from the inside out, because I was physically addicted to alcohol, and I was coming up on 48 hours without a drink. And every molecule in my body was screaming simultaneously, go get a drink. And as I'm sitting there looking at the good members of Alcoholics Anonymous, my head started talking to me about how I wasn't like them and what did I think and what was I playing this game that I was going to get sober. I never get sober. I always drink again. I go through all the pain for a couple of 3 days, for a week, maybe 2 weeks, and then I drink again. And my head's telling me, why don't we just bypass that pain? Why don't we get a drink? And I'm going to leave Alcoholics Anonymous my second night because I can't take the pain of sobriety. And I caught a break. Because over in the corner were two card-carrying members of Alcoholics Anonymous named Lou and Mark. And Lou and Mark were where they were every Tuesday night. And it's the most important moment of my life. Whether I live or die is going to be decided in the next few minutes. But for Lou and Mark, it's just another Tuesday. And the way they tell the story is they saw me. And they looked at each other, and Lou looked at Mark and went, whoa. And Mark looked at Lou and went, yeah, buddy. And Lou said, I bet we can't get him sober. And Mark said, well, we're here anyway. And they did something at that point that I think is the most important thing we do in an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. More important than the format, who's sharing, what we're doing, when the meeting starts, where it's held, who's making the coffee. It's the most important thing that happens at a meeting. Two card-carrying members took a 30-foot journey across the clubhouse of Alcoholics Anonymous to cordially welcome a man who was dying from the disease of alcoholism to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they introduced himself. Hey, I'm Lou, this is Mark, we don't think we've met you. Why don't you come sit with us? And they got me a half a cup of coffee, and my journey began in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you, if you expect me to make that same journey to Mark and Lou 30 feet, you gotta understand, when I'm on my second night of recovery, I can't make it. It's a million miles. Don't you know where I've been, who I've hurt, what I've done? Don't you understand I can't get my eyes off of my shoes? I'm not in a position to shake hands. You see, Mark and Lou understood they would have to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And they did that for me. And I got Mark as a sponsor. They assigned me, and my journey began. And Mark got me busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he absolutely insisted I participate in giving this thing away. And when you're new and you're broken in half and you're hopelessly in debt and you're living at your sister's house, you don't think you have anything to offer. And I got to tell you, I was wrong about that. I had stuff to offer. The minute I got a sponsor, the minute I started he started giving me direction. I started to become a productive member in Alcoholics Anonymous. I started showing up early. I started staying late. I started setting up meetings, putting out literature, making the coffee. All these things that I thought, I didn't understand the connection. Where's the connection between that and God? Where's the connection between that and getting sober? But while I was doing that, it was reducing my feelings of difference. I started to make friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I started feeling connected. I started feeling like I was pulling my weight here, that I had a reason to be here. And I started to learn how to do 12-step work. And I was doing 12-step work with these guys, man, that were like 12-step masters, you know what I mean? These were the old guys that knew how to go out into those neighborhoods that other people were afraid to go into, and they weren't afraid. And they were to carry the message anytime, anywhere. And they'd let me go with them, you know what I mean? They'd say, you can't talk, but you can watch. And I'd get in the car, and we'd go into these neighborhoods, and these guys, I'd watch the hand of God work through these alcoholics. I watched that hand reach into the abyss and grab another hand of an alcoholic. I watched them pull people into Alcoholics Anonymous. I watched people try AA, and I watched people get sober. And I had a front row seat for the resurrection of other people's lives. I started seeing God working in the lives of others. And sponsorship started changing my life. And I found out a lot of things about being an AA member. You know, there's a lot more to getting sober than just, you know, working the steps or just going to meetings. You know, it takes something. Somebody had to show me how to be an AA member because I wasn't housebroken when I got here. You know what I mean? But I had a sponsor, and I found out there's a lot of rules in Alcoholics Anonymous that aren't conference approved and aren't written down anywhere, that are passed down from alcoholic to alcoholic, from generation to generation. And seemingly, for my first 30, 60, 90 days, every time I went to a meeting, my sponsor had something to tell me about some grievous error I had made in Alcoholics Anonymous. You say, Don, if you don't like what somebody's sharing in the meeting, you can't go in the corner and do push-ups. Don, if you don't like what somebody's sharing in the meeting, you can't get coffee six times. Don, if you don't like what an old-timer says to you, you can't threaten to kill him and make amends later. Don. Because here in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's dog rules. You know what I mean? You don't know. It's dog rules now. You don't know you're doing anything wrong until somebody has the guts to point it out to you. I mean, I got a dog at home, Bo the Wonder Dog. He's 7 years old now. He's amazing. You spent 5 minutes with my dog, Bo. You turn to me and you go, that's an amazing dog you have there. But like any dog you can think of, right? Bo at one time was a puppy. And like every puppy, he had to learn. He didn't know the rules. I remember being on a phone with a sponsee once when Bo was a little puppy, not anymore, than a couple months old. I'm talking to my sponsee, and Bo comes walking out in the living room. I remember thinking, oh, there's Bo. He's so cute. Look at that little puppy, you know? And right as he got into the middle of the living room, he stopped and went into a crouch, started taking a dump. And I said in the phone, oh, no. And my sponsee on the other end goes, what's going on? I go, oh, Bo's taking a crap in the living room. He goes, do you have to go? And I go, nah, it's too late. No, man, you can't grab a dog in the middle of that. You'll traumatize him, you know what I mean? You got to kind of watch him. You got to keep an eye on him. You got to kind of stalk him. And if he looks like he's going to do it, you got to go scoop him up. It'll freak him out a little bit, like, I'm in the air, I'm in the air, I'm in the air. And, you know, and you get him outside, you drop him on the lawn, you stand back, and he'll look up at you in all honesty and go, what the hell was that, man? And then he'll realize he's outside and he still has to go to the bathroom, and he'll figure, well, I guess I'll go poop while I'm here. And man, if he goes poop after you bring him out, you better throw a party. Hooray, Bo, what a good boy, you did great. And he'll look at you surprised and go, dude, you want me to poop out here? I did not know. I love you, man, I can do that. And we do the same thing with our new friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm telling you. Because they come in AA, man, and they crap all over the place. They make us crazy. We don't know what they're doing. But we got to be the guys that take the time to teach people how to be AA members the way they taught us to be AA members. And if we do that shoulder to shoulder, but not in domination, but we invite people. You see, my sponsor, he invited me into his AA life. He didn't tell me to set up meetings. He'd come to me and say, hey, listen, tomorrow night we could use your help. Do you think you could show up and help us set up? He left me a little dignity, involved me in his AA life. He invited me into his commitments. And I started to do things in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started to get involved, and I started to feel better about myself. I learned how to be an AA member. And I remember being 6 months sober, and I went on a 12-step call. And, went on a guy with 6 months and another guy with 14 years and myself, and I had 6 months. And there was Donnie, man, and Donnie's drinking whiskey. And he had called Alcoholics Anonymous at the end of his rope and wanted to know what we had. And the guy with 6 months hit him with his 6 month stuff, which sounded great. And then the guy with 14 years hit him with his 14 year stuff, and that was amazing. And then I hit him with my 6 month stuff, which sounded like this. I haven't drank in 6 months. I've been in AA. I got a tyrannical figure in my life called a sponsor. I'm not even sure if I really like him. I go to meetings every night, but I work, for minimum wage at a job I really hate. I'm still living at my sister's house. I don't have a car. I'm hopelessly in debt. I don't know. If you want what I have, And we leave that 12-step call. Donnie's still drinking, and I think it's a, failed 12-step call. But my sponsor taught me, if you leave a 12-step call and you ain't drinking, it's been a successful 12-step call. So I get home from that job. I bleed out the next day, and the phone rings at my sister's house, and it's Donnie. And he's talking to me. He goes, hey, man, where's the meeting tonight? I couldn't believe it. He was drunk the night before. So I give Donnie directions to the meeting, and I say to him, hey, man, do we need to come pick you up? And he goes, no, man, I got a car. And I remember thinking, God, he's doing better than I am. You know what I mean? And So now I got to race down to Alcoholics Anonymous to beat Donnie to the meeting, you know, so I can cordially welcome them. So I get down to the meeting hall and Donnie shows up and I cordially welcome him to AA and I get him a half a cup of coffee and we sit down at a table and Donnie goes, listen, man, that stuff you said about sponsorship makes sense. Would you be willing to sponsor me? And I said, I'll get right back to you. And I found my sponsor. I ran over and I go, you know that 12-step call last night? He goes, yeah. I go, the guy's here tonight. He goes, that's great. That's amazing. I go, not only that, he asked me to sponsor him. Oh, that's beautiful. What'd you say? Well, I told him I'd get right back to him. Let me get this straight. Last night, the guy's drinking his brains out. Uh-huh. And somehow he made it to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Uh-huh. And he took whatever strength he had left and asked you for help. Yeah. And you said you'd get back to him? Yeah. He says, go say yes, you selfish bastard. And then he walked away dismissively. And I yelled at the back of his bald head. I said, hey, man, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't want to kill him. And he went, ah, you got to kill a couple before you get the hang of it. And he just kept walking. AA, we care. No, we don't. And I'm thinking, what could this guy possibly want from me? What could I possibly offer this guy? But hell, I said, yes, I'll sponsor you. And we start going to meetings together, you know? And we're going to 14 meetings a week because those are the meetings I'm going to. And we're going to book studies. We're going to literature studies. We're going to discussion meetings. We're going to speaker meetings. And I noticed if we're in a book study and it's Donnie's turn to read, Donnie won't read. He passes. I know we don't pass in Alcoholics Anonymous. We participate in our own sobriety. My sponsor taught me that. So I got to explain that to Donnie. So I grab him after the meeting. I go, hey, fella. When it's your turn to read, you read, man. We're in AA. We participate in our recovery because my sponsor taught me that. And Donnie got all sheepish, and he looked down at his feet. He said, hey, man, I got to tell you something. He goes, I don't read so good. In fact, I don't really read at all. Man, if you made a mistake like that in polite society, you'd be so embarrassed. Like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I hope I didn't offend you. But we're in AA, man. Nothing bothers us in AA. And what came out of my mouth was just intuitive. I said, Donnie, this is no big deal. I know how to read. And for the next 6 months after two meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, Donnie would drive me home to my sister's because he had the car. And we'd park outside my sister's house underneath the streetlight. And Donnie would have his big book in his lap and I'd have my big book in my lap. And we'd read the big book back and forth to each other. And I'd help him learn how to pronounce words and I taught him what words meant. And Donnie learned to read reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Donnie's sober 6 months less than I am today. And if you heard Donnie read in a meeting, you wouldn't think he went to Yale, but you wouldn't think he came to Alcoholics Anonymous with that under his belt. And I'll tell you, it doesn't matter what we come in here. We all come in here with assets, and we all come here with shortcomings, you know? And you don't have to be embarrassed about anything. I remember, man, when I was new, I was so embarrassed about owing the IRS that 80 grand. I was so shameful that I'd let my life get so out of control that I'd let that happen to me. And my sponsor told me what they tell you, you know, and I didn't think it was true. He goes, oh, that's no big deal. It's a lot of money. But, you know, with God's help, those things seem to take care of themselves. Don't worry about it. But in reality, what he did is he immediately put it into service in Alcoholics Anonymous. Seemingly for the next couple of years, if any newcomer had the audacity of complaining about his little $1,500 IRS debt to my sponsor would go, all right, hey, that might be true, Jimmy. Jimmy, hold that thought. Hey, Don, you got a minute? And I'd walk over and he'd go, Don, tell Jimmy what you owe the IRS. And I'd go, I owe the IRS $80,000. And Jimmy'd go, Jesus. And I'd go, just want to be a service. And I'd walk away. And suddenly Jimmy feels better about his life. And I'm sponsoring guys. I've been sponsoring guys since I was 6 months sober. I've never been without sponsees. And if I had to pick one reason that I'm sober today, I'd definitely say it's because I've always been willing to sponsor people. It's the brightest part of my life. It's the thing that really fills me up. I just love being a part of that process, shoulder to shoulder. I love it when I'm sitting in my living room or I'm sitting at the kitchen table and reading the big book back and forth, and I'm watching the lights come on in somebody's eyes. But I'll tell you the truth, man, sponsorship's done a lot more for me than I think I've ever done for everything, because I don't know what it does for other people, but I can tell you what it does for me. And Sheldon talked about that wedge it drives into our self-obsession. I remember being 10 years sober and getting sick, and I'm going to the doctor, and I'm getting worse, and they couldn't diagnose me. They didn't know what was wrong with me. And they started putting me on Western medicine, and all hell broke loose, right? And what started for me was a year of sickness, a year. Not a month, not 6 months, a year. I felt like crap. But I went to AA. I didn't miss any meetings. I went to work. I did the best I could at work. And I kept going. And I kept going to the doctor. And they couldn't figure it out. And at the end of the year, I'm getting tired of it, man. I'm tired of being the sick guy. You know what I mean? And I met with my doctors one day, and they had this new experimental medication. And they said, listen, we're going to put you on this, and one of two things is going to happen. One, it's either going to work great, or two, you're going to have really adverse side effects. So they put me on this stuff, and I had the adverse side effects. Man, I went to work, and I only made it about 20 minutes. I was just so sick. And I came home, and I went from, like, being so cold I'm wearing a parka and shaking to being so hot I'm sitting there, and there's sweat just flying off my body. I'm in the worst pain I've ever been in my life, and I'm just laying in bed in the fetal position, man, and I feel so bad. I feel so sorry for myself, and I'm scared. I don't know what's wrong with me, and they can't seem to figure it out. My wife's getting tired, and the phone rings. And I look down, and it's a guy I sponsored. I'm thinking, no, man, not now, not now. But I got good training in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what I mean? I answer the phone. I say, what's up, buddy? And he asked me, he goes, how you doing, Sponce? Because everybody knows I'm sick by this time. And usually I lied, you know what I mean? I said, you know what, I'm having a tough day, but with God's help and AA, I'll make it through. But for whatever reason, I decided to tell the truth this morning. And I said, how am I doing? Let me tell you how I'm doing. I'm not doing well, man. I'm in the worst pain I've ever been in my life. And I'm just laying here in the fetal position, curled up in a ball, and that's punctuated by running dashes to the bathroom, if you know what I mean. And you know what? I feel sorry for myself. I'm so full of self-pity. It's dripping off the walls, and I hate how sorry I feel for myself. And I'm scared. You want to know how scared I am? I'm scared I'm going to die. And you know what? I don't want to die. And I can't believe that God took me this far to drop me on my head. And I'm pissed off at God, and I feel like I have no relationship with him. And I've lost my faith. You want to know how I'm doing? That's how I'm doing. Dead quiet. Couple of seconds go by, and he says, wow, Sponce, I am so sorry to hear that. Listen, I met this girl. And that's why we sponsor new people. Because they just don't care. And it's the greatest gift in the world. It is the greatest gift in the world. The things that I've labeled as inconvenient in my sobriety have been the things that have served me the best. And I'll tell you, man, I'll go to meetings and there'll be a guy, some new guy will roll up on me and he'll say, hey, man, can you give me a ride home? And I'll think to myself, damn, I wanted to get out of the meeting. I wanted to shake a few hands. I wanted to get home. I wanted to have some dinner. I got a big day tomorrow. I wanted to watch some ESPN. I wanted some me time. God, don't you know how many people are in this meeting? Don't you know who I am? Don't you know how long I've done this stuff? There's 60 guys here. Why'd you single me out? My God, is it because I'm tall? Do I look spiritual? And all that stuff doesn't matter if I think it as long as I go, absolutely. But I'm not thrilled about giving him a ride home. You know what I mean? But now he's in my car. And he never lives in the same county I do. It's always two counties away. Always. God forbid he lived in my neighborhood. No, we won't have any of that. Where do you live, Skagit County? Of course you do. And now I'm really pissed because I see dinner going away, ESPN going away. I'm doing math in my head. How long is it going to take to get this loser home and get back to my busy, good life, you know? And it doesn't matter if I think that as long as I give him the ride. And I'm driving him to the halfway house. You know where they have a bigger TV than I do at my house? I'm going to take him there. And I'm thinking, you know, and I don't want to talk to the guy, and I don't want to engage. But you know what happens when you got a newcomer in the car? God flies in the car. Next thing you know, he's talking. And then I'm talking. He's telling me about his life, and I'm identifying. And I'm telling him about my life, and he's identifying. And I'm telling him about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got that glint in my eye and that bounce in my step. I got that fire in my belly, and I'm telling him he can have that too. Now I pull up at the halfway house. And, man, before we got there, I'm thinking I'm going to slow down to 5 miles an hour, and he can tuck and roll. But now I pull up real polite, and I shut down the rig, and I don't get out, and he doesn't get out. And we're talking about life, and we're talking about AA, and he's telling me about his life and all the things that have run out his sleeve and how he doesn't think it's ever going to be okay again. And I'm telling him I know how he feels, and I tell him how I arrived in AA and what God did for me and what he would do for this guy. And we sit there for 45 minutes talking in front of the house, and now I'm going to miss dinner, and I'm going to miss ESPN. Not only that, by the time I get home, it's going to be late. And maybe I'll grab a sandwich and go right to bed, and it's going to be a tough day tomorrow because I'm not going to get any sleep. And I finally say goodnight to the guy, and as he's getting out of the car, I hear myself saying, what are you doing tomorrow night? Do you need somebody to come get you? It'd be my honor and privilege to pick you up. And something's happened in the front seat of that car that I didn't even want to give the guy a ride home. And now I'm driving home alone, but I'm not alone. I'm driving home with God, and I can't get the smile off my face. And I have spiritual inconveniences filled me up. And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder what the little people are doing tonight. Because I'm living large in Alcoholics Anonymous. And as long as I'm willing to take those actions, I don't have to worry about the rest. And it happens again and again and again in my life in AA. As long as I'm willing to say yes, as long as I'm willing to not negotiate my sobriety, I will find myself wrong about these things again and again. In 2004, my wife Eileen and I moved to the Pacific Northwest, and we're from Los Angeles. We're concrete, steel, and glass, and suddenly we're 8 miles out of town with 150-foot trees, and it's, I mean, it was culture shock. I mean, it's dark at night, you know what I mean? It's like darkety dark dark. I remember the first time I forgot something out in the driveway and I had to go get something out of my car, right? I didn't have the porch light on. I didn't have a flashlight. I got halfway to the car and a little voice in my head said, "Cougar." And I just like jumped up in the air and just ran back in the house and slammed the door. And Eileen's looking at me and going, "What's wrong with you?" And I go, "Don't go out there, dark, darkity dark, dark." And I just wasn't used to it, man. And we're city kids. I remember one time we were taking a drive out in the county, man, where they have all the dairy farms. This one beautiful Jersey cow got right up against the fence, man, like right next to the road. My wife's like, "Stop the car, stop the car." And I stop the car, man, and she gets out. She's standing in the middle of this two-lane road trying to take a picture of this Jersey cow. And about this time, this old farmer comes up in his old beat-up pickup truck, and he stops right next to my wife. And she jumps back, goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, was I in your way?" And he goes, no, I just want to ask you something." She goes, "What's that?" She goes, "You do know it's a cow." And she said, "Uh-huh." And he goes, "Just checking," and drove off. So we're city kids, right? And we got wildlife where I live, man. We got cougar, we got bear, we got skunk, we got possum, we got raccoon, and we got deer. We got deer up the yin-yang. They're everywhere, man. And the first summer, the mama starts showing up in our backyard with those spotted fawns, and we lost our minds. I'm like, "Oh, my God, we got baby deer." You know, if you need 20,000 photos of a baby deer, I got them. You know what I mean? Just wearing out my digital camera. Just unbelievable. And we fell in love with these deer. And we're city kids, and this one deer in particular, man, I fell in love with, you know, because he was real inquisitive. He was this boy deer. He was fearless. He'd walk right up to you and then run away, and he had this big scar across his face. You know, when I made up this story in my mind, like he got into it with a buck defending his mom's honor, and more than likely ran into a fence, you know, but but we're city kids, so we named the deer. That's Mama Deer and Scratch, Mama Deer and Scratch, and we love these deer, and they're showing up every day, man, and just was a great time. And then, you know, rutting season comes in the fall and the deer start losing their summer coats and putting on their winter coats, right? And but not Scratch. Scratch started looking a little rough, you know, started losing his fur. And I made that observation to my wife. I said, "Scratch is looking, I don't know, kind of ugly." And she goes, "Yeah, he is." And my wife's like that girl, man. She gets on the internet and researches it. And she reports back to me that it's actually an affliction they get in their first year called hair loss syndrome. And if they lose enough fur, when the winter comes, they won't be able to eat enough to keep their furnace going, and they'll get hypothermic, and they'll die. I said to my wife, I go, "Scratch is going to die?" And she goes, "Uh-huh." I go, "Not on our watch." And I lost my mind. And we started breaking every Washington State wildlife management law in the books, man. We're setting up, you know, supplemental feeding stations all over our backyard. And when you got one sick baby deer, you can't feed the one sick baby deer. So we got 20, 30 deer coming from all over in our backyard. My wife, 5'3", 130 pounds, she's in the backyard chasing out 150-pound bucks going, "Let the sick one eat. You're selfish. You're self-centered." And I'm like, "Oh, my God. Oh, my God. They're going to find her impaled, you know." And it's just, and it's not working, man. It's not working. And, you know, fall comes, and now the weather starts changing, and Scratch is losing more and more fur, and I'm obsessed with this baby deer. I'd go to work, and I'd call my wife from work. I go, "You see Scratch today?" And she'd go, "Yeah, I saw him." I go, "How's he look?" She'd go, "Not good." And I'd shake my fist at God, "Not this one, God. You don't get this one." And we're feeding him, and it's getting worse. Now winter's come. And this poor guy's lost all the fur on his body except a 3-inch wide, 2-inch high swatch of fur from the nap of his neck to his rump. And we've overfed him. He's eaten so much, and now he's rounded out like a beer cask. So now he just stands in my backyard. He's fat and ugly, mohawk, newcomer deer, just sitting there just eating and pooping. And I'm just obsessed with this deer. We make it to spring, and Scratch doesn't die. And for the next 4 or 5 years, every rutting season in the fall, he'd come down from the high country, show up in our backyard, and we knew it was him because of the scars. Magnificent buck, huge rack. and my wife would feed him apples by hand. And I'd watch that scene and I'd think to myself, what was it about that damn baby deer that made me lose my mind? And one day it hit me. I'm that baby deer. I'm that newcomer sitting in the Simi Valley Alano Club with anybody with a glancing familiarity with alcoholism would have taken one look at me and said, that guy over there, he's going to die. And two car-carrying members of Alcoholics Anonymous saw the exact same thing and said, not on our watch. And they did what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they gave me that spiritual first aid and introduced me to a new way of life. And if I know anything today, this is what I know. It's our watch now. And I know that why we're in here this weekend, safe, sane, and sober, they're out there in the streets of Montgomery, Alabama, and they are dying. And they are coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they don't even know it yet. They're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're looking for us, and they don't even know it yet. But they're finishing up their stories. They're running out their string. And they're going to end up in our respective home groups the way that we showed up, hopeless, helpless, hapless, not knowing why they're here, not knowing what they're looking for, knowing AA won't work for them in a million years, but they got nowhere else to go. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, when they show up, where will we be? And more importantly, how will we be? Am I going to be sitting in my home group with my buddies cutting up, talking about my latest business deal, my golf trip, my money, what I'm doing later on? Or am I going to be like Lou and Mark with my eyes trained on the room, my eyes trained on the door, looking for men to 12-step? The only job we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, carrying the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. We are in the saving lives business. We are Alcoholics Anonymous. I know they're coming to AA, and I know they're looking for us. I hope we're ready, and I hope we stay sober forever. Thank you so much for a beautiful weekend. That's it.